This is the Don Wade and Roma Show. I'm Paul Harris, filling in while they're off on vacation. Proud to have you listening to the legendary Big 89 WLS. Daniel Gardner joins me now. He's got a new book. It's called The Science of Fear, Why We Fear the Things We Shouldn't and Put Ourselves in Greater Danger. Dan, welcome to WLS.
Good morning.
I was talking yesterday on the show about a municipality that has decided that if you're going to have a backyard inflatable pool, you know, one of those things with a foot or two of water in it that your kids can play in or that you can soak your feet in on a hot summer Chicago day, that if you're going to have one of those, you got to have a fence around it and an audible alarm built into it just in case somebody or some animal falls in. And I did that story yesterday, and then I read your book later in the day, and I thought, well, these two go together perfectly, don't they?
Yeah, that sounds pretty familiar. Yeah. I don't know the particular story, but it sounds familiar.
But we're afraid of all sorts of things happening to us that really, statistically, are small risks, aren't they?
That's exactly right. And simultaneously, we have a lack of concern for the things that are actually significant risks. That's the flip side of this equation. You know, as a journalist, for years now, I've been working on stories like cancer, crime, terrorism, and so on. And time after time, I would find that when I really dug into the research, I discovered that the threat was not as bad as it was portrayed in the media. It wasn't as bad as it was popularly believed. And at the same time, I'd also be digging into the research, and I'd be coming up with facts which indicated that we are, in fact, the healthiest and safest people who ever lived, by far the healthiest and safest humans in the history of our species. And, you know, this increasingly was striking me as this amazing paradox that people are fearful of what are, you know, by any rational measure, pretty trivial threats. And we're worried, increasingly worried about these things. And simultaneously, no one's really appreciating the fact that, boy, we're awfully lucky to be alive today. You know, I'll just give you one statistic. There are many that I could use to illustrate this, but just one. At the beginning of the last century in the United States, the child mortality rate was almost 1 in 5, meaning almost one in five American children died before the age of 5. And that was for rich and poor families alike, right across the United States. Today, that child mortality rate is, of course, much less than 1%. So there's been spectacular improvements in health and safety, and yet here we are wringing our hands over, you know, whether we should have an alarm around our, you know, little backyard inflatable pool.
Yeah. Not only that, we always hear stories about how America is becoming so much more obese and how we're an unhealthy nation, and yet, thanks to modern science, we're living longer than ever before.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Now, on obesity, on some of those issues, including obesity, I would actually argue that those are some of the issues where we're actually underestimating. You know, as individuals, we should be more concerned, because when you look at what actually kills people and what people are afraid of, there's not a lot of match. What actually kills people, according to the CDC, the three leading causes of preventable death are, number one, tobacco, no surprise. Number two, poor diet and lack of exercise. Number three, alcohol. So right across the board, those big three killers, those causes of preventable death, they're all lifestyle issues, things that we can take care of just by living a little bit healthier. These other things, putting a fence around your inflatable pool, I mean, that just doesn't register on the numbers.
Where was salmonella tomato on the list? Because that was the latest one. You know, there constantly are food scares that come around, and that was the latest one that got me, you know, because I went to the store that day when that story broke. I went to the store that day, and there was the guy putting up signs, guaranteed salmonella free, in the produce department. I'm not making it up. He's putting up a sign there, and I thought, A, how can you guarantee that? And B, isn't it sick that you even have to put that sign up in the first place?
Well, and the amazing thing is that people get the perception that because of stories like that, that somehow, you know, the food supply is more dangerous than ever, or that it's getting increasingly dangerous or whatnot. You know, that's just so out of line with reality. In fact, that's a great example, that the tainted tomato story. If you look at the number of stories in the media on that on that very issue. You know, it was a tidal wave of media stories. Well, let me tell you something. On June 11th, 2008, the CDC issued a press release called, and the headline in that press release was U.S. deaths down sharply in 2006. And then there's a whole slew of statistics showing that the increase in life expectancy, the decline in mortality rates, actually accelerated in the last couple of years. And there's, you know, it's good news across the board. Well, that release from the CDC was basically ignored by the media. You know, there's this stunning disconnect between the bad news and the good news and what people hear.
It's Paul Harris filling in for Don Wade and Roma, talking with Daniel Gardner. His book is called The Science of Fear. Talk to me about the media's role in a lot of the things that we're supposed to be afraid of, and whether you feel, you know, because I hear comments all the time, oh, the media only harps on the bad things. Of course, good news really isn't news in our modern media. Yeah. It is something that is something horrible that has happened. The problem I have is not the reporting of something that has happened. It's the reporting of something that has happened and how it will now happen to you.
That's right, that's right. Or something that may happen, let us now speculate.
You know, some child swallowed his sock and choked to death, and now all America has to be afraid of its socks.
Yeah, no, that's right. Basically, in my book, I posit that there are three factors. The most fundamental factor, the one that underlies everything, is human psychology. Number two, there's what I call the fear marketers, the individuals and organizations who profit by the promotion of fear. And there's a long list of those, everybody from politicians to activists to police chiefs. And then number three is, of course, no surprise to anybody, it's the media. And as everybody knows, the media, they like to tell, and I am the media, I'm a journalist, we like to tell the bad news, the scary story, the tragic story, the emotional story. And what's interesting to me is not so much the analysis of that problem. Yes, we do that, and we do ignore the good news, and we also do hype up, you know, these incredibly rare events, such as the child swallowing the sock, therefore your child must be in danger of swallowing socks. All that is true and fairly obvious. What's more interesting to me is the question of why we do it. And I think the answer to that lies, again, to go back to psychology. Evolutionary psychologists say that basically human beings are wired for storytelling, both the telling of stories and hearing stories. We want to hear stories. We have no similar wiring for numbers. We have no intuitive sense of numbers. Okay, so we really like stories. We're not so interested in numbers. What is a good story? What constitutes a good story? Well, what's interesting is whether you're talking about the evening news or a Hollywood movie or Shakespeare or the Bible or any story since the beginning of time, it's always the same thing. Number one, it's about identifiable individual people. Number two, it's emotional. Number three, it's got novelty. Number four, it's got conflict and drama. So, and when you look at what the media actually presents in sensationalizing things, sensationalizing reality, it's not so much that they're doing it to make money. You know, it's not some sort of, you know, callous, you know, the media are rubbing their hands and saying with glee, we'll make more money if we do this. It's that they're following that human instinct for storytelling towards the dramatic story. These are the stories, you know, the reporters are attracted to those stories for the same reason the audience is attracted to those stories. That's just human instinct. The problem is that when you pile up the novel story, the individual story, that, you know, the emotional story, you end up creating a cumulative picture of reality, which is often, very often, not only wrong, it's often upside down. Crime is the best example of this. By far the most commonly covered crime in the media is, of course, murder. And it's not just any murder. It's usually the stranger killing somebody, or it's the drive-by shooting or whatever, the unusual murder.
I would have to disagree with you. I think the number one crime that's covered in the media is missing white girls.
That's exactly right. It's the crime that actually appeals to the audience. Boy, that one's scary. That could be me, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you then turn around and look at the actual array of crime statistics, what you discover is that the media's portrayal of crime by telling only those individual stories is not only wrong, it's actually upside down. By far the most common crime is actually nonviolent crime. Within that branch of violent crime, most of it is just common assault. you know, murder is only a tiny strand of that. And then within the murders, most of the typical sort of murder isn't actually covered in the media. So, in fact, the media end up with this portrayal of crime by going after the unusual story, the gripping story, the emotional story. They end up creating this cumulative portrait of crime, which is actually upside down. And this happens routinely. The same thing happens with breast cancer. The typical person with breast cancer, you know, a woman's risk of breast cancer rises as she gets older. It's that simple. You know, a woman in her 80 plus, you know, a typical woman with breast cancer is a woman in her 70s or 80s or so on. But the media's portrayal of, in the media's portrayal of breast cancer, a typical victim of breast cancer is in her 30s or 40s. Why do they do that? Well, because a young mother of two who gets breast cancer is a more tragic story than an 85-year-old great-grandmother who gets breast cancer. And so they go after the more emotional story. But unfortunately, by constantly doing that, they end up creating this portrayal of reality, which is totally off base.
Yeah. So it's our lack of perspective and the lack of the reporter's perspective as well, combining to those two. I've only got a minute left here. Dan, tell me the role of government and governmental agencies in promulgating this fear.
Well, I mean, look, when it comes to politicians, first of all, you have a very simple calculus. After the Columbine massacre being a classic example, the statistics showed very clearly that school safety was actually improving after the Columbine massacre. In fact, crime within schools was dropping rapidly. But the public perception was that it was doing the opposite. It was going crazy. As a politician, you have a very simple calculation. I can either get out in front of the crowd and say, I share your fear and I promise to keep the wolf from the door, which is very popular and you can win votes, or you can stand up and you can say, hey, everybody, calm down. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
Which will get you pelted with tomatoes. And so you have
probably with salmonella.
Yeah, absolutely. And so and of course your opponents will pummel you for not taking the problem seriously. So it's a very straightforward political calculation, and as a result the entire political class always errs on the side of exaggerating these threats.
Exaggeration and exploitation in politics? That's crazy talk, Dan. The book is called The Science of Fear, Why We Fear the Things We Shouldn't and Put Ourselves in Greater Danger. It is a terrific read and full of true perspective, and I congratulate you on that, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Dan Gardner with Paul Harris for Don and Roma on the Big 89 WLS.